The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to Vox Markets. I am John Heumann, and I'm delighted to be joined today by John Prideaux, Chief Executive of Boku. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing great. Lovely to be here on Vox Markets.
Excellent. Good to have you. A great opportunity to talk through what was a very, very strong trading statement that you released this week. Talk us through the headline numbers. They're very, very strong.
Yeah. So, you know, broadly speaking, we've had our sort of revenues have grown in constant currency by 14%. But underneath that, we've had that accelerating. So the first half, our revenues grew by about 7%. But then in the second half, that accelerated to 19%. And the thing that was really driving that was a new sort of business line that we're going after, what we've also called local payment methods. And they grew, you know, extraordinarily fast, something like 8 times in terms of the volume, nearly 2.5 times as fast in terms of the number of users underpinning it. So, yeah, we're pretty pleased. Overall, we think we'll deliver, you know, at least $20 million worth of EBITDA in the year. So yes, it's been a really strong trading performance, and particularly driven by new products that we've been pushing over the last couple of years or so.
Absolutely. You mentioned local payment methods as the real driver of the strong performance here. So the business is in a bit of a transition from what you're traditionally known for, direct carrier billing, to these local payment methods. Can you describe exactly what that means?
Yeah, so direct carrier billing is a fairly esoteric way of paying for things. It's where you buy it and charge it to your phone bill. And it's really useful for companies because it helps them get extra customers because it's just simple to use. But it was only ever going to account for, you know, 10 or 15% of the spend. I mean, we have customers like sort of Netflix and Sony and Spotify and Apple and Microsoft and Google and so on. And as digital customers, they use that direct carrier billing in order to be able to, you know, get a few extra customers who weren't able or didn't want to pay with their card or a more conventional payment mechanism. But out there in Asia, cards are not really the way that people pay. In countries like China or Indonesia, you know, Japan, Korea, Thailand, Malaysia, and such like, the average person didn't really have a payment card. And so when it came to paying online, those economies kind of skipped a generation and went straight to mobile wallets. And for a Western audience, a mobile wallet will feel a bit like an Apple Pay or a Google Pay when you're buying something online. But in those countries, the idiom is not sort of sticking a card in an Apple Pay wallet. It's you just connect your bank account to it and it works naturally. And they've become incredibly popular. And in fact, most payments for online purchases in those countries take place using wallets. And because of the large population of that part of the world, most payments online globally now take place using wallets, not using the cards that we would be typically using here in the West. So we started to, you know, connect to them. And you know, the problem for a global merchant is that there are just lots of these wallets. You know, two in China. People may have heard of Alipay and WeChat Pay, for example. But you know, there's 4, 5, 6 in Indonesia, a couple in Japan, 2 in Korea, 3. And so, you know, the problem faced by a global merchant is they don't want the hassle of connecting to each one of these things individually. They want, you know, they come to us and we simplify it for them. And, you know, that's really started to be quite an impressive business line. We started off with Spotify using us in places like Korea and Indonesia. And subsequently, we've picked up, you know, a number of quite important contracts, which have really powered the growth in the second half of the year.
I noticed that you've recently signed an agreement with Amazon, which I guess is one of the biggest e-commerce platforms in the world. You talk through, you know, where that takes you in terms of the transition to local payment methods and actually where you are overall in terms of that transition.
So most of the business is still direct carrier billing today. So at the end of the year, if you count it by monthly active users, we had about sort of 7% of our monthly active users were on these new payment methods, and 93% obviously were on direct carrier billing of one sort or another. But what's, you know, disguised in that is the speed of the change. So the number of monthly active users, it grew by 230%. And in revenue terms, it's even bigger because we make more money, you know, about twice as much money per monthly active user on a local payment method. So you're now talking, you know, high, you know, mid double digits, mid-teens, in terms of our revenue is coming from the new local payment methods as an exit run rate. Amazon is yet to come. You know, Amazon is an absolutely huge deal. Amazon was the only company that Boku did not provide direct carrier billing services for. We did work with them a bit on bundling services, but we didn't provide payment services to them before. And for them to select us after a competitive tendering process that had all of the other payment companies in, to be selected to be the company to offer local payment methods for them in Asia and Africa, was a massive, massive endorsement of the strategy. Now, of course, none of that Amazon is in the numbers today. None of it. What's driven that has been, you know, the work that we've done with other companies. So I say probably the most important deal we launched in the second half of last year was with, shall we say, a major gaming player, a games console manufacturer, the details who are able to, not being authorized to say who they are. We operated the service for them in China with Alipay and WeChat Pay, the two largest wallets in the world, with the largest sort of console manufacturer in the world, in the biggest country, gaming market in the world. This was a massive endorsement. It drove our numbers significantly. And what's important about this is we've been winning from some very big companies here. That win in China was a switch to Boku away from Worldpay, who is obviously a well-known payment organization, but our message of quality is resonating with global companies. And similarly, we had a win in Vietnam recently, where we were able to take Spotify to switch their connections from Adyen, who are also seen as a kind of golden boy of payment processing. But it's our specialization on doing these wallets in a certain way is enabling us to win against much, much bigger companies. And it's really helping us to power our growth going forward.
Yeah. So what is it that brings them to you? And one of the things that I noticed, particularly as a particular characteristic of your business, is your regulatory position. This is something that one of your brokers wrote about. What is it on the regulatory side that gives you that competitive advantage?
Well, because it's painful to get licenses, and so it acts as a moat. I mean, we have the capacity now to provide regulated payment services in about 50 markets around the world. Now, as I say to my friends, I don't know if you've ever tried to apply for a payment license in the Philippines recently, but it's not a 5-minute process. It's a thing that takes time. And of course, it's the sort of thing you need to have in place, a piece of infrastructure that you need to have if you want to be a credible payments provider, is you need to be able to provide the regulated infrastructure that allows you to move money in and out of countries and provide it at the best rate back to our customers. So our regulatory position is definitely part of our competitive advantage. The other thing is just our model. Other payment companies just push totally for scale. And if you look at the card marketplace, that's what it is. And cards are standardized. The bigger you are, the lower your unit cost, and somehow that's your advantage. But with these local payment methods, because they're all different, our approach of customizing our integration to each local payment method, has really proved a big advantage. And we've make it our business to work with the world's largest companies who can really benefit from that customized approach. And that helps us deliver, 4, 5, 10, in some cases even 15% improvements in acceptance rates or revenue per user. And that's sort of gold dust to big merchants. So we sell our wares very much on the basis of quality, on the basis of investing a lot in each connection. That's something that obviously only works if you're dealing with big merchants. So, we've got pretty good at selling to global merchants. Not many companies can say that they work for Apple, Sony, Spotify, Microsoft, Meta, Google, Tencent, and so on. But they come to us because we're providing them the very best integrations and the very best level of integration and service.
I mean, you mentioned that some of the traditional payments providers depend upon scale, but your scale is not exactly small. There's a number that jumped out of me in your trading statement, that the network's expanded to reach 7.3 billion end user accounts. I mean, this is vast.
Well, it is. I think that in 92 countries. So you know, I'm not going to say that every one of those 7 billion people has actually transacted, or 7.3 billion people has transacted with Boku, but you add up some very large numbers. When you connect together all of the world's largest telcos and you connect together all of the world's largest mobile wallets, you know, our merchants, in principle, have got access to a very, very large number of accounts. Now, clearly, that will resolve down to a smaller number of people. I mean, it's not like we're using the whole world's population. People will have a phone number and they'll have a mobile wallet. But yes, that's the scale we can deliver. We are a global payment provider operating in many, many countries. And our merchants, you know, want to have one plug to be able to reach the world. And that's what we, you know, aim to provide them. And those, you know, those 7.3 now are split fairly equally. It's about 55%, you know, the reach of the network is about 55% of traditional direct carrier billing, so mobile phone accounts. About 45% is coming from the newer payment methods. And that's the bit that we're investing in, really.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you mentioned investment. This is something again that your broker Edison picked out, and it's that the higher prices, the better gross margin you're achieving from a local payments method, almost acts as a virtuous circle that then allows you to invest more in the business and the products. Can you talk us through the investment plans?
Yeah, I mean, so the natural shape of a payments business is one with very high operational gearing, because each incremental transaction generally doesn't cost you anything, and so the difference between, you know, our growth in revenue and our growth in EBITDA essentially is the investment we're making in the future. So when we move from direct carrier billing into wallets, and particularly now into account to account or real-time payment methods, we've had to up our game. You mentioned regulation, that's costly. You know, we have to have licenses, people on the ground and all the rest of it. And at the same time, we've also got you know, to upgrade some of our settlement systems so that they can, you know, perform, you know, daily settlements and reconciliations, and with a much higher volume coming through. In direct carrier billing, frankly, you know, you probably pay your phone bill once a month, so that leads to a flow of funds that comes through once a month. But with the wallets, you know, we need to do daily settlements, and that really has taken some investment. So we've done a couple of years of investment, and this year we will still be putting on sort of more staff to further to improve our capabilities. But from about sort of 25, the increasing amount of our revenue growth will fall through. And, you know, we're definitely looking at a situation where we can see a clear path towards sort of doubling our revenue and returning to operational gearing in the kind of, you know, 70% range, of 70% or so of the revenue that we generate falling through to the EBITDA line.
And the other thing you mentioned, so more countries, I guess, are coming down the track as well. You mentioned in the statement that you've obtained a payments license in the Philippines. Now Malaysia is on the way.
That's right. I mean, we operate in Malaysia at the moment, but we work with partners, and we can do direct carrier billing. But getting the direct license there will enable us to operate the real-time payment mechanism in Malaysia, which, would you believe it, is called Do It Now. So that's certainly something we're aiming to try to develop.
Yeah, brilliant. One other thing you mentioned is, so it's been a great year, but of course, you know, no year, particularly last year, you know, when sort of the world's markets were in chaos and economies were in chaos, you know, there have been headwinds, one of which was currency. Now, you're a currency business, and the currency volatility last year must have been, you know, incredibly difficult to navigate. Are you more optimistic now? Or A, how did you do that? And B, you are more optimistic we're in for perhaps a bit of a less volatile year on the FX front?
Absolutely right. I mean, if you look at our headline numbers in terms of revenue, that, you know, the growth was pretty anemic. I mean, 2.24% or something in terms of revenue growth that we had, but it's 14% on at a constant currency level. Why? The strength of the dollar meant that all of that business we were doing in Japan or in Korea or Europe or UK and so on, when translated back into dollars, which is our reporting currency, you know, you just had fewer dollars at the end. Now, in practice, a lot of that you know, didn't really affect us. We had some natural hedges because we have, you know, a majority of our expenses are outside the US as well, so we were able to manage it. We don't really practice hedging in terms of it. I don't think it's really going to help us manage it, because ultimately the revenue that we get is the consequence of the sales that our merchants make in the countries that we operate. And I'm not a currency speculator either. However, having said that, It does appear that the dollar strength is coming off. We started to see that at the tail end of last year. That seems to have continued. The Bank of Japan is making its own moves, which has clearly led to the yen strengthening somewhat. So I think whilst we've had currency headwinds in 22, you know, the wind, if it, you know, seems set fair to be at our backs in 23. Ultimately, the sort of growth, however, that we're getting, particularly on these local payment methods, is a bit immune to some of those changes. And I'm really pleased the way that investors have seen through that and seen the constant currency performance. And as I say, the way it's accelerated through the second half of the year is something that's good.
Yeah, indeed. I think they're quite rightly focused on the strength of the business and the growth that you're delivering. So tell us what comes next. I think you've got a Capital Markets Day coming up. What can we expect on the news front?
So we're trying to, you know, clearly, you know, another big event will clearly be when we launch with Amazon. So we've signed, but, you know, signatures make signatures, but launches make money. And that's scheduled to take place with the first launch of a wallet with Amazon in Q1 of this year. We also would expect to see more growth coming through from our existing merchants. So a lot of our launches happened in the second half of the year. We're going to get the full year effect of that throughout the course of 23. News flow wise, I mean, the other area that we're focusing on alongside wallets are, you know, account to account or real time payment mechanisms. That's definitely an area of focus that have been growing incredibly fast. So in places like Brazil, there's a payment mechanism called Pix, which has grown extraordinarily fast. In India, there's a payment method called UPI that we're looking to work with. And also we would be looking to try to launch our first European local payment methods as well. Customers are coming back to us and saying, you know, that they like our performance so much in Asia with these newer methods, that they're saying there's some methods in continental Europe they'd like us to work with as well. So, you know, it really looks set fair for 23, to be honest.
Yeah, lots to go after, and hopefully lots of good news to come. We're going to see the results of the in full on the 21st of March, I think it is. Looking forward to them.
That's the date, yeah.
Excellent. Fantastic performance. And thank you so much for sharing the detail behind them. Thanks, John.
Thank you very much, John. Been my pleasure.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.